So I'll be tracing the decline of food for First Nations from pre-European contact to the present day. In this presentation, I argue that the decline in the quality of diet for First Nations people in Canada from pre-contact to reserve period to our present day isn't a direct result of colonization. It happened through the deliberate assimilation laws and policies, all undergirded by colonialism and racism. I've been interested in the diet of various groups of people for a while, and in particular Indigenous people in Canada, because they've had such a drastic shift in their diet. As I listened to Audrey Logan, an Indigenous urban gardener and knowledge giver, I was struck by how laws, policy, and mindsets, in reality colonization, caused a drastic change in the decline of nutritious foods for various First Nations groups. I was honored to be able to hear Logan's version of our colonial history as an Indigenous woman, because she deeply understands how colonial policy has shaped our early food history. Through her interview, she refers to First Nations food in generality, most likely because her identity is as a First Nations person, not of a particular tribe, because she grew up in CFS, and that knowledge of one's birth, parents, and band was hidden from you. She did, however, point to a book by Terry Garvin, who lived among the Cree, Chipewyan, and Dogra people of the boreal forest of Alberta. Her aunt, Katie Sanderson, is here pictured the second from the left, and her grandma is on the first on the left. It's not just food we're talking about, but people and their identity. Here is pictured five generations. Through colonization, systematically, people were torn away from their rootedness with the land, their food, and each other. First Nations food is an integral part of their holistic view of life, identity, culture, and spirituality. In a study done in an Anishinaabe community, one female Abathawana elder says, "We are always from the land. I am from this land." That's what Anishinaabe means. Logan also gave her interview in a nonlinear way, which I saw also was a way in which she embodies the medicine wheel. 7,000 years ago, up until about 300 years ago, the Cree, Chipewyan, and Dogrib of the boreal forest, this came from the same book that I was mentioning before, prior to an introduction of commercial products in Western Canada. This First Nations diet consisted of natural fur-bearing animals. Up until 200 years ago, they lived solely off the land. They ate all animals, birds, fish, roots and plants, wild veggies, and many edible fruit-bearing plants. And here's a picture of some men showing off their catch. Logan pointed out that food was a communal thing, which this picture demonstrates. Also, here's a picture of a calendar of when berries would ripen during the season. So lots of different berries, more than what we typically think of. We think of strawberries and raspberries and blackberries or blueberries, and there's a lot more up north, and they're used to be there and slowly dying out. First Nations were also farmers. They weren't just hunter-gatherers. Most recent archaeological findings prove that there were many First Nations farmers who had farmed for thousands of years. Logan explains this misunderstanding by saying when Europeans arrived, it was a patriarchal society, so they were looking at what the men were doing, which was hunting, and ignored the fact that the women were the owners of the land and the food. Permaculture is a way in which plants benefit from one another. First Nations have been doing this for thousands of years, and they planted multiple crops in a forested area. Logan says Indigenous people all over the world have been planting this seeds this way for years. As Westerners, we've just come up with a really nice fancy term for it now, which is permaculture. All over the world, Indigenous diets have slowly been overtaken by processed food. The Indian Act, move to reserves, residential schools, and the widespread adoption out of Aboriginal kids, all of which involved laws, policy changes, and forced assimilation, was caused by the onset of European settlements or colonization. Racism and ethnocentrism have been woven into the very fabric of Canadian policies in regards to First Nations people. George MacDonald, in 1887, explained the purpose of the Indian Act through the colonial mindset. The great aim of our legislation has been to do away with the tribal system and assimilate the Indian people in all respects with the other inhabitants of Canada. For Logan and other First Nations peoples, the Constitution affected them in that it pertains to the factor that they cannot share food off the reserve and they could not use machinery on reserve for farming anymore. The fact that Logan misremembered speaking of the Section 35 of the Indian Act when she meant to say the Constitution means that both of these acts have severe negative impact on the First Nations people. Racism is clearly embedded in our Indian Act and Constitution. Through colonization, First Nations found themselves forced onto reserves. As settlers moved west, the First Nations lost their land and were allocated reserves, often the worst farmland. With the forced move to reserves, First Nations became more dependent on government handouts. Logan reports that before the move to reserves, there was never a lack of food. And after the move to reserves, many laws restricted food. The displacement to reserves brought loss, but forced assimilation through the residential school system brought even more trauma and loss of generational food knowledge. The most horrific part of colonization and assimilation was the forced removal of children from their homes, families, and culture to residential school, where the goal was to kill the Indian and the child. During this time, traditional food practices went underground, and the generation did not learn from their elders the value of traditional food or methods to harvest, preserve, or prepare it. George Manuel, a residential school survivor, recalls, "Hunger is both the first and the last thing I can remember about that school. Every Indian student smelled of hunger." The forced assimilation of First Nations into mainstream Canadian culture continued through the 60s scoop, which refers to the mass removal of Aboriginal children from their homes into the child welfare system, in most cases without the consent of their families or bands, and placed mostly in Caucasian families. This drastic overrepresentation of First Nations children in care continues in our present day. This is explicated by Logan's personal narrative, where she stated she was raised in CFS, and as she gulped afterwards, it shows the painful experience of dislocation and uprootedness that foster care brought. As a child of the 60s scoop, it was this policy that separated her from her people and her identity. In our present times, people are more heavily relying on buying food from stores. In northern stores, Chloe Donatelli, who is the northern liaison for Food Matters Manitoba, has stated that up north there is mostly processed foods. She would say about 80% are generally canned, boxed, or bottled, while the others 20% are fresh foods. And here is a chart showing prices of food up north in one store. So you can see, for example, a block of cheese is about $20. Juice is $36. So prices are a lot more expensive. And here is a chart I got from the Food Matters Manitoba website. They had done a study on the Cross Lake First Nations community, and this also shows the percentage of how much more expensive food is in the North Mart and Family Foods in Cross Lake versus what it is in Winnipeg superstores. So, for example, carrots are 259% more expensive in Cross Lake than they are here in Winnipeg. Sugar is the other one that's a lot more expensive by 105%. So in the North Mart, it's $3.29. In Superstore, it's $1.69. So in conclusion, people are switching back to traditional foods, and it's a trend that's happening kind of all over. And as I listened to Logan's narrative, I really got from it that she was able to switch back to traditional foods and really was able to heal from diabetes, and she has her fibromyalgia way more under control. And she's no longer homebound, and she's more active, and she's grown and gathered almost all of her own food. So, Yeah, so it's just one example of the trend of going back to traditional foods and people finding that they can, yeah, that they can bring healing to themselves through that. Logan reclaimed her identity as a First Nations person through reconnecting with land and traditional food ways by bringing healing for her identity and physical healing. All the efforts of assimilation and colonization undermined people's identity with the land, but it did not destroy it, as they are reclaiming it through their relationship with the land and food. That's it.